Evening Waugh, the great English novelist, said of his own conversion, he said, "The conversion is like stepping across a chimney piece from an absurd world where everything is in caricature into the real world that God made, after which everything is a delicious process of discovery. The rest of your life is just this voyage of discovery in this limitless space." Go.
Welcome to Faith and Culture, a production of the Augustine Institute. Every week, we explore the glory of the Catholic faith and the beauty of Catholic culture. And now, here's our guest host for this week.
Welcome to the Faith and Culture podcast of the Augustine Institute. I'm Michael Barber, Associate Professor of Scripture and Theology, and I'm on the other side of the microphone here, guest hosting this episode, because our guest today is our usual host, Joseph Pierce, who is the senior editor at the Augustine Institute of the Faith and Culture Journal. He is also the editor of St. Austin Review, series editor of the Ignatius Critical Editions, and executive director of Catholic Courses. His books are numerous and include titles such as The Quest for Shakespeare, Tolkien, Man and Myth, The Unmasking of Oscar Wilde, and so on and so forth. Your reputation precedes you. Joseph, it's great to have you on your own show. It's a little awkward here, but this is fantastic because I want to give you the opportunity to tell us a bit about your story and your journey to the fullness of truth here in the Catholic Church. So this is a great opportunity to let you sort of stretch out a little bit.
And well, Michael, thank you. And I must say this, being in the hot seat is not quite as simple as putting other people in it. and I would also like to say, actually, for the benefit of the listeners here, this was unscripted. I've actually just recorded a podcast with Dr. Barber about his journey to the faith.
Now that's on record. So now it better air at some point. Now this is a two-parter.
Exactly. But you know, at the end of it, he basically hijacked the whole event and said, we can't leave. I'm going to interview you now. So I succumbed to this spontaneous act of rebellion on my colleague's part, and here I am in the hot seat. So it's wonderful. And so, so what does he want me to say?
Well, I'd really be interested in basically hearing your story. So we were just talking about my sort of journey in Catholicism. I am not a quote-unquote convert, although as we pointed out, all cradle Catholics need to undergo a constant process of conversion. So I was talking a little bit about my experience and my coming to a deeper understanding of the relationship of faith and reason, but I know that was a big part of what drew you in to the Catholic tradition. And you have such a great literary mind, and so very few people sort of take the path that you have. So I wanted to sort of draw that out a little bit and hear a bit more about your story. I mean, where was it, if you could, sort of put your finger on the moment where all of a sudden you started to feel maybe the first inklings or had a first glimpse of the Catholic Church and saw something new?
Yeah, well, first of all, yeah, I'm certainly not a cradle Catholic. In fact, I could probably describe myself as a cradle anti-Catholic.
Ooh.
In the sense that I learned my anti-Catholicism at my father's knee. So I was raised in a very anti-Catholic culture. And so my early life was really governed by an anger and a bitterness and a bigotry, which found expression in a white supremacist ideology and politics, and my involvement with the anti-Catholic sectarian terrorist organizations in Northern Ireland. So I was about as far from the Catholic Church probably as anyone you can imagine anyone being.
Sure.
So I would never have read a Catholic book. Mm. I've never read a Christian book. You know, I wasn't interested in Christianity, except in a negative sense, and Catholicism was the worst form of Christianity. Hmm. But I was interested in politics, and someone persuaded me to read a book by G.K. Chesterton that was ostensibly on Chesterton's political and economic views. Hmm. And I was blown away by Chesterton's political philosophy and became, if you like, an aficionado of Chesterton. Hmm. And at first, in fact, my experience of Chesterton parallels exactly C.S. Lewis's experience when he first read Chesterton. Hmm. And so I'll maybe let C.S. Lewis speak for me, because what he felt, I felt. So Lewis was in the British Army during World War One, in the trenches, in fact, recovering in a field hospital. And he picked up a book of Chesterton's essays. And he was an atheist at this stage. Lewis was an atheist and an anti-Catholic, because he was born in Northern Ireland. And he said, you would have thought that Chesterton would be the most least convivial of authors for me. Mm. But there was something about him, his sense of humor. And what Chesterton said, actually, at rock bottom, it was his goodness. Mm. And he said, he even used the phrase falling in love. It's like falling in love. And it's not that I wanted to be good myself, but I admired the goodness in him.
Isn't that the way it is? Yeah. Right? You meet someone who has a special spark, who has this personality that's so attractive that you just, you're drawn in and you want to learn more.
Well, that's the whole point. I mean, we talk about the good, the true, and the beautiful, but this is exactly what it was.
It's embodied.
Really. Because it was, exactly.
It's embodied.
Well, the goodness of Chesterton you fall in love with, and then you're more open to listening to the truth. Because
his credibility.
This man's good. Right, he's reliable. I like him. He has a great sense of humor. I like being with him. His personality sort of leaps forth from the page. So you're almost in his presence. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't agree with everything, because what Lewis said, he said Chesterton has more common sense than all the moderns put together, except of course his Christianity. So, and that was exactly my position. Yeah, I can take all the Christian stuff and leave that to one side and just take the rest, you know.
Sure.
But of course, you begin to realize that Chesterton's philosophy, his political philosophy and his economic philosophy and his philosophy of life is informed by his Christianity and indeed his Catholicism. Mm-hmm. And so bit by bit, I found, if you like, my anti-Catholicism eroded and if you like, subverted by this engagement with the reason which Chesterton pour for, which I didn't realize was Catholic. And by the time you realize it is Catholic, it's too late to get out of it.
It's too late.
Yeah.
So it's not just the appeal to reason here, right? It is the attractiveness of, as you said, goodness.
Yeah, and I do think. I mean, Pope Benedict said that, you know, that the saints are the greatest evangelizers. I mean, the greatest witness to the faith are the saints themselves. In other words, by their fruits you shall know them. Sure. What does a love of Jesus Christ do to people?
Sure.
Right, and when we see that goodness in others, it speaks for itself.
Sure.
And so I do think, yes, it was the goodness in Chesterton, but the fact that the goodness in Chesterton was inseparable from the reason that Chesterton got. So that this connection between faith and reason became absolutely crucial to me, because I was on a quest to make sense of things. What's the meaning of life? Huh. What's the purpose of things, right? So I wasn't a quest for, you know, philosophy, a love of wisdom. Mm-hmm. Something had to be rational. I wasn't interested in anything which was irrational. Mm-hmm. And Chesterton, by the way, I should say, I didn't stay with Chesterton. I moved from Chesterton to others.
Right, I wanted to get to that.
Yeah.
So where did you go from Chesterton?
Well, Chesterton led me, first of all, to his friend Belloc, and then C.S. Lewis. And then eventually I read Newman's Apologia, which was very important to me. And then to eventually Thomas Aquinas, books about him, and then just chunks from the Summa. Can't claim to have read through the Summa from cover to cover, but I fell in love with Aquinas. You know, that he to me, I mean, it just doesn't get better or deeper than Thomas Aquinas. And so you realize that, you know, this is an edifice of reason.
Yes. So what about the, so obviously the reason, the philosophy is there. What, if I can, for lack of a better term, what spiritual truths were drawing you in beyond the literary, beyond the logic?
Yeah. I was convinced for years after my conversion, in fact, because I'm a slow learner. That's my problem, Mike. I'm a slow learner. So for years after my conversion, I was convinced that my path to Christ was entirely rational. And if this was, of course, arrogant, in hindsight, retrospect, arrogant, you know, basically I just learned the church is just encapsulates, I mean, Chesterton said about the Catholic Church, it's the one continuous institution that's been thinking about thinking for 2,000 years, right? And that blew me away. Yeah, this is it. But then I realized that something else was happening. I experienced on my path, on my journey, love. In response to hatred, you know, and I was working very much an eye for an eye person. I hated my enemies. I expected my enemies to hate me. That was our comfort zone, right? Yes. We hated each other. We knew where we stood, no problem. But when I expected someone to hate me and strike me back when I struck them, and they responded by turning the other cheek and actually, you know, showing me love, that is so disarming, right? The presence of love, the presence of mercy, the presence of forgiveness is something which actually rips you apart into, if you want to be strong in a Nietzschean sense, sure, right? Of just destroying your enemies.
Right, the cross unmasks
exactly
the power, right?
Exactly.
Of the Roman government.
It's the presence of love as self-sacrifice. And although I couldn't have articulated it in that way at the time, that's what I was experiencing.
Sure. You know, the Catechism of the Catholic Church has a beautiful line. It says, by love, God has revealed himself and given himself to man. He has thus provided the definitive, superabundant answer to the questions that man asks himself about the meaning and purpose of his life.
Wow.
And so what is the Catholic faith? Well, according to the Catechism, the Catholic faith is nothing less than God's superabundant answer to the questions that we've had, right? So would you say that it seemed, what you're saying here reminded me of that quotation. You had these questions about how does it all make sense, and the Catholic Church is the institution that's thinking about thinking.
I mean, obviously, I give literary allusions. You're a biblical scholar, so you quote from Scripture and the Catechism. But, you know, even in war, the great English novelist said of his own conversion, he said that conversion is like stepping across a chimney piece from an absurd world where everything is in caricature into the real world that God made, after which everything is a delicious process of discovery. So basically, it's like, you know, leaving a cramped space which you think is reality and moving into this cathedral or this cosmos, which is explained through the words of Jesus Christ in his mystical body of the church. And the rest of your life is just this voyage of discovery in this limitless space.
Sure, yep. Right, so from that experience, how have you thought about now being a Catholic? The idea that John Paul II talked about, Paul VI talked about, Pope Francis talks about, right, in his most recent apostolic exhortation, the new evangelization, right? How is it that our thinking about thinking can appeal to others who might be in that cramped space? How do we reach those people who are in a cramped space and help them enter into that delicious world, right, that we're meant to really recognize?
Obviously, there are various approaches to this. I see that the good, the true, and the beautiful, there's the apologetics of goodness, which is basically the apologetics of sanctity. If you want to win converts to the faith, you become a saint, which is easier said than done, but it's the best way, right? The more that we become saints and become like saints, the more we'll be attractive to others. So that's the apologetics of goodness. And then you have the apologetics of truth, which is reason, theology, philosophy, etc. And then you have, which has become my apostolate, if you like, the apologetics of beauty. You show the goodness and truth of God in the beautiful manifestation of creation and sub-creation. You know, things that the image of God in us, our imagination, the beautiful things we can do with that, and how this, if you like, shines forth epiphanously, right, the presence of God through the beauty around us. And so that's the third way, if you like. And this third way, the apologetics of beauty, the evangelization through the power of beauty, is what I'm trying to do, and what indeed these Faith and Culture podcasts are hoping to do.
Right. So I think it's so necessary and so needed. I think a lot of people today understand that the Catholic Church thinks that it teaches the truth. And yet for a lot of people, the stereotype is that truth is not very attractive.
Right, right.
It's a no, as Benedict XVI would say.
Yeah.
But as Benedict said, the church doesn't impose truth. It proposes the truth. Right. It's not like the church wants to somehow capture us and chain, you know, enslave us. No, the truth is what, as Jesus said, sets us free.
Right. And not just what he says, what he does. And what he does is be crucified for us. In other words, Jesus doesn't come down and enslave us.
Right.
Jesus comes down, if you like, becomes enslaved.
Right.
So he to love is actually to offer. You can't force. You can't force love. And so really the Catholic Church is the great lover, because the Catholic Church is the mystical body of Jesus Christ.
Right.
And we are meant to, and we're called to fall in love with her. And those of us that have never stopped thanking God for the fact that that love affair is the center of our lives.
So when you look back on your pre-Christian life, you talked about it being characterized with the language of anger.
Yes.
Do you think that anger is an expression of sort of a frustration that there isn't an ability to find rest, to find peace, to find fulfillment? It seems to me you're a jovial guy. We had a great breakfast. You and I could talk for a long period. I don't see any anger coming from you. You're smiling the whole time we're talking. You're enjoying being Catholic.
I am. Well,
you seem to enjoy your life now.
I'm the beneficiary of the great love of Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
and the healing power of that. I have no anger in me now,
right.
and I thank God for that, because it's not anything rationally that I've got through my own will. It's something that's been given as a gift. So that is something for which I thank God, and I can't thank God enough. Indeed, every single day of my life, if you like, is an effort, however pathetic it is, at repaying. Mm-hmm. Some of the unpayable debt that I have to Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I remember before my conversion or whatever, I don't think I enjoyed getting up in the morning,
right?
I had all these things I had to do that were my duty as a Catholic.
Uh-huh.
But there was no joy in that. But it wasn't until I found the answer to the questions that I was looking for, it all began to make sense. That seems to be... it seems to, even though we come from different sides of the pond, different life experiences, it seems that there's a lot of common ground there. All right. Well, thank you so much, Joseph, for being willing to sit in the hot seat and allowing me to sort of co-opt the show on you. we'll go back to our usual programmed format here in the next episode. But it's been a delight to spend this time talking with you. Thank you so much for listening to the Faith and Culture podcast, and be sure to tune in next time to hear Professor Pierce interview more stimulating guests and to have more great conversations that you've become familiar with now, having heard his podcast in the past. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Faith and Culture with Joseph Pierce. Faith and Culture is a production of the Augustine Institute. For more information, please visit us at faithandculture.com.